two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is dedicated to our former co-host, friend, and brother, Aaron Zundel. He died almost 2 years ago of mental illness, and Aaron, we still miss you. We know you would have loved to be in on the discussion of this one.
Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Resistance is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is...
It's in my hand, Paul!
Fan Effect.
It's been said that in order to appreciate something, you need to know its opposite. Sickness and health, light and dark, good and evil, to name a few. In the world of heroes, the rules are the same. The best stories usually feature a good villain, slight pun intended, for our heroes to overcome. You see, in order to appreciate the stakes of what the hero's trying to do, the level of threat must be escalated to a point where we don't know how, or even if, our hero will be able to win the day. The best villains are those who find our hero's weaknesses and attack them. The list of truly great, iconic comic book villains is not very long. Lex Luthor, Magneto, Thanos, Venom. But probably no villain is as loved by the superhero fandom as Batman's archenemy, Joker. And that's who and what we're talking about today. Joker, in his own solo movie, and not without some real-world consternation. Hi, everybody. I'm Andy Farnsworth, and I'm pleased to be joined in this episode by our old friend and OG SLC fanboy, Tyson Webb.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Our DC fangirl and frequent guest, Kellyanne Halverson of KSL News Radio's movie show.
Thank you for having me.
And first-time guest, but hopefully not the last, Herb Scribner of the Deseret News. He's a staff writer and web producer for DeseretNews.com, has also freelanced for the Boston Globe and Huffington Post. Welcome, Herb.
Thank you for having me. I'm so pumped to be here.
And we're pumped to have you here. And part one of the things that caught my eye, I've seen your content on DeseretNews.com for a while, and I've thought, oh, you know what, Herb would be a great guest. And then last week, before the movie premiered, you actually wrote a feature article for DeseretNews.com that we'll discuss later called This is the Wrong Time for Joker. And I said, hey, you want to be my guest to the movie? Turns out you were already going to see it. So yep. Now we're going to talk about the movie, and then we're going to talk about your article and see if you feel differently after watching it than you did before you watched it. So that's the setup. It's taken a while to get Joker his own solo movie. Whether it's necessary or not is one of the topics that I wanted to talk about today. It is expected to win the box office on its opening weekend, and some talk is in the neighborhood of anywhere from $75 to $100 million. Could be higher, could be lower. DC itself is kind of in the slightly lower end of that range. But alongside the obvious interest came, I would say, an unprecedented level of scrutiny for, could you call it a superhero movie? What do you guys think?
No.
Is this, does it fall in the superhero genre? It has to, because it features one of the most popular comic book villains of all time. That's what I think. What about you?
I don't think it's a superhero movie at all. In fact, I just, you know, this, if you remove Joker and you remove all mentions of Gotham and the characters in it, it stands on its own. It's a fantastic movie still. It's just that it was set into this time, probably for, as we discussed beforehand, so people will go and see it. I think it has a lot of social commentary. I think it's an amazing film, but I don't think it's a comic. It's not the comic book film that you and I know and that we've been associating with for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm. And it's too real to really be considered a comic book movie, in my opinion, or a superhero movie, in my opinion, where usually you have the kind of fantastics and the origin story when it comes to a superhero film. This one is is a bit more gritty than that and more of a real
bit
universe.
More?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Well, and comic book films are shot in a certain way, too, right? There's a certain style. There you can you honestly, for comic book violence, I feel you're taking out of it. You're taken out of it a little bit. You're pulled back a little bit, so it's not as
realistic.
It doesn't affect the, yeah, it's not as realistic. This one is real. It's gritty. It's disturbing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the moments that are connected to the comics of Joker and Batman, Gotham City, and all that, they're so stark and they take you out of the film almost. And for that reason alone, it's like this, like you almost forget that you're watching a comic book movie or like based off comic book characters. And so from that perspective, like you can't call it a comic book movie then because you're forgetting that it is one.
But isn't that the best kind? Isn't that really the goal? On the one hand, is you want to make, from the filmmaking perspective, you want to make a movie that people aren't like, oh, this is a comic book movie. They're just like, in fact, as I read a quote from Todd Phillips was when he was trying to sell Joaquin Phoenix on it was, hey, let's make a freaking awesome movie that just happens to be about a comic book character.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Yeah, and I think this might be, and we're in a very interesting phase in comic book movies because you know Marvel's still dominating a lot of the marketplace, and they just had like their own kind of conclusion, right? So, and there's
which was
going.
Definitely a comic book movie,
right? Definitely comic book movies, and so you got to wonder: is this maybe even the future of comic book movies, where they're very isolated, they're their own movies, but they use comic book characters? So rather than retelling origin stories, taking comic book movies and like or comic books and like throwing them together and creating a movie, it's creating a movie but using the character name and likeness to kind of sell it. I think that might be an interesting thing if that's where everything's headed.
Well, and to me, that was one of the most striking things. And one of the reasons that for me, Joker was a hard movie to rate just in my normal style of reviewing movies. Because as much of a fan of comic books and comic book movies as I am, I wasn't looking forward to seeing Joker for a couple of reasons. One, my own preferences have always been with the heroes, and I've never quite understood people's fascination and even for some glorification of the villains and the psychopaths.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Because I know that Tyson's a big Darth Vader, but, you know, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
And two, do we really need to know why Joker is who he is? I mean, he's Batman's big villain slash arch rival, and he's crazy. Does it really, really matter how he got there? I personally don't think so.
No, but since Batman isn't in this movie, I think it's a wonderful journey of how he became who he is. Well, the thing is, it's stuck in the real world, right? So much of comic books are fantastical. He dropped into acid and he came out looking like this and he's whatever. What I loved about this movie is so real and such real life, this mental condition that he has, the way he was abused as a child, all of these things that happened in his life that made him who he is at the end of the movie, and he just became the Joker. He wasn't looking to become the Joker. He wasn't looking to become to lead any kind of a revolution or to have minions or whatever. It just happened because he was serving himself.
I can see what you get the question, though, of do we actually need this, though? I think that the answer is we do need a Joker movie. Maybe not necessarily this one, but Joker, we're interested in the origin story anyway. And it's partially because of our love of the heroes. We want to see the antithesis of that. We want to see where that struggle comes from. And so I think the fact that we even have a Joker film right now isn't necessarily the love of the character as it is the love of Batman in the universe.
As it is the love of
that.
Money by Warner and DC. No, and I say that somewhat cynically because really any movie is created to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But true. I really feel like in this particular case, it was an excuse to make money. I don't remember if we said it on the air, if we talked about it just before we went on the air, but if you take Joker out of this movie, I don't think it's a movie that outside of the most artistic crowd is going to want to see it. Nobody would see it. Nobody wants to watch someone descend into madness. So the fact that it's the Joker is the reason that you go, and it's the reason that you stay, and it's the reason that you put up with what's in it, because it's Joker.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Batman's bad guy. That's the only reason we even allow that to happen all the way through the movie without saying, I hate this and this is terrible. And what was the point? What did we gain out of this? If it's not Joker, if we didn't gain Batman's supervillain, then what was the point?
Yeah, and I definitely kind of agree with you there that if you take Joker out and it's just like a movie called like Laugh or Smile or something like that.
Or Clown.
Or Clown, right? I think you're going to...
Yeah, in fact, you get even fewer people to go see it then,
yeah.
Since half the people are scared of clowns anyway.
Yeah.
Arthur, like that was joked. I think Todd Phillips said, I just wanted to call it War Arthur.
Except for, unfortunately, there was already a movie about it.
A couple of them.
The interesting thing there is that I do think it would have been one of those movies that, like, it's like a cult movie where, like, some people have seen it, and then, like, Joaquin Phoenix gets Oscar buzz, and then all of a sudden everyone's got to go see it.
For Joaquin Phoenix.
It would have been, like, the most amazing.
And that's going
film
to happen
ever.
Anyway. Yeah. But that's what I mean is it would have been popular among the artsy set,
right.
But it would not make not even $80 million in its whole run, let alone on its opening weekend. Kellyanne?
Well, and even talking about the artisticness of it, I guess, it really does have a very cinematographic art house feel to it, which I think maybe it's kind of, it goes back to the spinning off from a regular superhero film to its own little genre creation within there.
Him being Joker also made some of the points of the movie more fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that when we get to the spoiler portion. I wanted to do kind of a spoiler-free review portion for people who may be just wondering, hey, I don't know what to think. There's been controversy in the news. I've heard that it's dark, but I've also heard all these great things about it. And it's this weird balance. And, you know, to me, that was one of the challenges as I was trying to review it, as I was trying to balance what I thought was very interesting and very really top of the line cinema, like camera angles. It's hard to say.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It was
shot.
A well-made film, I'm going to quote myself, with some very impressive acting performances and cinematic moments. Todd Phillips created very cool visual shots full of obvious and sometimes hidden symbolic meaning. Mm-hmm. And he did such an amazing job of illustrating Arthur's type of mental illness that I actually found myself wondering several times during the movie if what I was watching was actually happening, or was it a memory, or was it just a straight-up hallucination? And I have to give credit for that. So I'm going to bag on the movie later in some ways. But I have to give credit for what was really well done, which was what Phillips did. I mean, in the spoiler portion we'll talk, but it has to do with the staircase, and there was, colors and different things that he used. But the other thing was Joaquin Phoenix's performance. I had a comment card, and I wrote, he was equal parts terrifying and amazing.
Mm-hmm. That sums it up.
What he could do in a single long camera take was astounding. And it's kind of frightening to think maybe he wasn't acting. I mean, that adds a little bit to the performance. But he immersed himself in the role, to be sure.
Definitely.
What were some of your guys' non-spoilery likes?
About his performance?
No, about anything, about the movie.
I thought it was brilliantly shot. I thought it was gorgeous. I thought the color tones were perfect for the mood, and the score was amazing.
The score was good, and the use of music was very amazing, well done.
Yeah. And Joaquin...
So was that in the trailer, too, honestly.
Yeah, and I pick up on sound and score and stuff like that a lot. That's something that I kind of feel the movie through its score, and so if it's a bad score, it takes me out of the story.
Well, and just the use of strings and the cello,
and how
it's
eerie
beautiful.
Some of those
right?
moments
I don't know
were.
If beautiful is the right word.
It's beautiful in its own way.
Like, haunting, for sure.
Well, then it's also contrasted with like Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
And these, like, very, like, uplifting songs, and you're kind of like,
French art house-y type things mixed in there.
After the last scene and the credits roll, and that, what was the song that came out? Do you remember what it was? It was like one of the, what we were just talking about, one of those Frank Sinatra type.
I think it was Jimmy Durante
put
on a happy
one.
Face or something. Well, they did Send in the Clowns also.
Didn't they redo it in the...
I think they did. Anyway. Yeah.
I don't know, because I'm never going
to
see the movie again.
To be left with that, and you're just sitting there trying to absorb what just happened in this entire movie, and then you've got this... You know, the kind of that slow Send in the Clowns, and then another one after that was more peppy. You just like, oh my gosh, what is going on?
And you needed that good of a score, because sometimes the shots were very long. It's very much a slow burn, and that score just pulls you in emotionally and hugs you and brings you into this world where if it didn't have such a good score, you might get bored.
There are shots where I felt like I was so close that I could smell his breath. Like,
oh my gosh,
yes, they really hugged his face a lot,
which was amazing, because his acting prowess was just off the charts, right? And especially after certain scenes where violence had happened, and he's trying to deal with what he just did and what happened and trying to make sense of it. It was just chilling, but also like so immersive, so amazing.
And I think some of the closeness as well with the shots and with the character, like it's uncomfortable, but very uncomfortable for a reason, because the subject matter, the person is uncomfortable, yeah. The character is uncomfortable.
Well, especially as he falls and slips further down this rabbit hole, right?
Oh, yeah.
And those close-ups, I felt myself pushing myself back in my seat. Like, I don't want to be this close to this guy. He could go off at any minute.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Well, let's set the table. Herb, I'll get your thoughts. But let's set the table for people who are still, again, don't know a whole lot. Not going to give away much in plot, but here's a clip.
Murray, one small thing.
Yeah.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Joker?
Yeah. The story centers around a man named Arthur Fleck, who's played by Joaquin Phoenix. Arthur's a socially awkward guy who works as a clown. Sometimes he's swinging store signs on the street or visiting children in the hospital. But he'd love to be a stand-up comedian. He lives with his poor and ailing mother. But he's also mentally ill, and he has a condition where he laughs uncontrollably, even if that's not how he's feeling, which puts him in a few awkward situations during the film. Mm-hmm. Without giving away the plot, for those who want to see it, Arthur's life gets worse, and his grip on reality does too, through a series of events and some information he discovers. His actions unwittingly inspire a populist movement in advocating violent rebellion against the rich, with him as the symbol. Mm-hmm. He eventually embraces that role and becomes the Joker. Now, I don't feel like that is giving away anything, because, again, the movie is called Joker. We know where he's going to end up. The question is, how does he get there? So I don't feel like we gave anything away synopsis.
No. It's a good synopsis.
Now, Herb, what were your thoughts?
I mean, like, I agree with everything that's kind of been said. One thing that...
You can disagree, too. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, like, I will disagree and say that I will see the film again.
Okay.
Only because I think, as we kind of were saying, when you go, you know it's called Joker, and you're waiting for that. And to see when he becomes Joker, to see when that happens. And there's this tension the whole movie. So it'd be interesting to watch it again without that tension.
Okay.
And one thing I kind of like said this to a friend randomly yesterday. And I was like, oh, this is actually, a great point. So self-clap. but
here, we'll clap for you.
Thank you. This movie was great. I think it was great. The violence kind of was a little extreme, but I get that's modern cinema. I get all that. Todd Phillips he can go that route a lot. But I think this movie, what's interesting to me is that like this movie, if it had done what The Dark Knight did with its violent moments, you know, for those who have seen The Dark Knight, when the Joker kind of does his pencil trick, if you know mm-hmm. what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They don't show it.
You know what happens, but it doesn't.
Right. So in this movie, though, they'll show those moments, and they'll show that violent act. And like if they had just cut, just like Dark Knight did, I think you would have gotten a kind of a cleaner film, and you would have been able to focus more on the themes and the issues that it was presenting, especially the mental health stuff. We can get into that later, of course. But I think that's one of the things that they could have explored deeper, but like you're just waiting for the violence. You know there's violence, and so it kind of like overshadows that issue.
You're kind of cringing at it.
But to me, it wasn't just violence. I mean, it was graphic violence. Mm-hmm. And right. I'm not sure, without getting into the spoiler portion yet, maybe we'll retouch it there, but I'm not sure that even quick cuts could have saved because of what, obviously, the visual they were going for. A quick cut could have made the actual death of some characters a little less
meaningful,
jarring
or hard to watch.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But the deliberate visual aftermath of those deaths needed to linger, at least to complete the psychosis of the movie. But so, to me, like it was graphic, it was more than that too. That it was. Go ahead, Kellyanne, and then I'll say the other thing.
Oh, I just think the graphicness goes to kind of the realness it's trying to portray and the reality that is the life of the Joker and his head is very violent. His life is very violent. The world around him is violent. So I think just the fact that they included that violence so realistically mm-hmm. and visually is it reflects the violence that's realistically in his mind, in his own reality.
Well, and I think the violence and the way it was portrayed really underscores his descent and his mental illness and mm-hmm. how his life and things that are happening in his life are compounding and compounding and compounding until it drives him to do what he does. And see, he never lashes out to somebody who is a stranger or somebody who, I mean, he doesn't know these people, right? He knows some of them, but he does lash out to strangers. But it's always people who have done wrong against him, and he felt like serving – I don't even think he felt like serving justice. He's got such a childish mindset. I think he was lashing out only to make some things stop and to right some wrongs that he felt like, you know, he had in his life. These were all things that were affecting him and his life – experience that he started to rectify once he learned the power of what
he could do.
He could do. And maybe we touched upon this more in the spoiler part. Because
we will,
because
we have to talk about
I think I need to talk about some
things
that will give other things away.
Yeah.
Right? To really.
So save that thought. Save that thought. Kellyanne?
So I think if. For spoiler-free, what I would want to tell people is you have to be in the right mindset in order to see this. Do you remember the old Simpsons when they did the Halloween tree House of Horror? How Marge Simpson comes out and she's like, hey, you guys, this can be scary for some people. Be careful. I'm going to do that for you right now. If you're someone who is struggling with a mental illness, with abuse, with things like that, along those, or if you're just don't feel like you're emotionally ready to view some of those things on the screen. Don't see the film at this time.
If you're anxious or maybe have
if you're anxious or things like that. Like even me, I struggle with anxiety and some other issues in my life, and I actually left and felt like way dark because of it.
Yeah. It'll linger with you for a while.
If I had kids, I wouldn't let my kids see it. But
I
at the same
let
time,
anybody under 16 see this,
right? At the same time. The issues it brings up is real. The issues of mental illness, of gun control, of the poor versus the rich, and disparities in our society, there are real issues that do need to be looked at some time. And the way it's done cinematographically is very pretty. But just be really careful walking into that and be willing to walk out if it is bugging you too much.
Well, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and I wanted to just agree with kind of what was said there with, like, leaving it, like – go in prepared what you're going to see, but also be prepared that it's going to like sit with you a little bit and you might feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right after the movie, there was like five groups of people in the parking lot.
Yeah.
These were the critics. Everybody just sitting at the cars talking with each other, trying to process everything they saw. It actually kind of cracked me up seeing everybody, nobody left. Everybody's like, okay.
Valerie, one of my friends, was like, hey, so what did you think? And I started talking and I just stopped in mid-sentence and I just gave her a hug. And I'm like, I'm still trying to process.
I needed a hug after that.
Yeah.
I almost.
I think
we're
all
like,
in the film through a traumatic experience.
It's a sad.
Right?
There's a level of sadness. Just at the end, I just remember feeling very sad, and it was hard for me. Like, and you hear those news stories about like the I think it was at the Venice Film Festival where there was like an 8-minute standing ovation or something like that.
I would not have been one of those people.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine clapping just because I was so like distraught with what I saw and so sad emotionally, and I couldn't really process. So I had to get out of there and just
get some food. That's art. Like it's important that you are exposed to things like this at some point. So it's so hard to say yes or no.
Right.
Everyone will disagree as to what the definition of art is. I think that's a fair thing to say. Sorry, Tyus, what were you saying?
No, I was just going to say, we all stayed pretty much until the end of the credits.
Just in case we get a Batman sighting with Robert Pattinson.
But it was silent.
That's what I was waiting for. Yeah,
like,
nobody
was
really
silent.
Talked.
Nobody was really talking. Maybe one guy in the very back, like halfway through. But other than him, it was silent. And I think we were all just trying to process what we just saw. And then we all kind of staggered out of this theater and had to give quotes to the Warner Brothers.
To the reps from the studio.
What do you even say?
That was why I'm glad they had the comment card so I could sort of put myself
together.
I wrote
two words
together.
On my comment card.
What was that?
Disturbing and profound.
Disturbing and profound.
That's
interesting. I agree with you guys. This Joker movie, not only is it not for kids, it's not for teens, not even 18 and 19 in my personal opinion.
I kind of agree too. Like even me seeing it in my early 20s, I don't think I could have handled it. So.
But it's also not a movie for people who like to feel good when they watch a movie.
Definitely.
Because there was no moment where you felt good. It's not the Joker from the Batman animated series, the video games, the 60s TV show, or even Jack Nicholson's movie version. Probably, as we talked, Heath Ledger's is the closest, but, you know, it's beyond that. And I say go see the movie at your own risk. I gave it personally 2 out of 4 stars because I had to split the difference between how impressed I was at some of the cinematic aspects and the acting and the distasteful feeling I had leaving the movie. I did not like this movie, and I can't recommend it to anybody who didn't already want to see it.
Well, I think you should at least have 3 hours of sunlight after the movie, and you have to go directly to somewhere where you can have a lot of light and ice cream.
And then
an opportunity to talk with those who saw it with you. Don't go alone.
Yeah, I felt good one moment. I'm going to admit it. I'm going to disagree and say I felt good in one moment, and that's when I knew I'm a Joaquin.
That it was over?
No. Yeah. I'm a Joaquin Phoenix fan. I've always been a fan of his.
Okay.
And so when the movie started and I could see he was already putting on a great performance, I was like, okay, I'm happy for him. He's doing great. So on a personal level, felt great. And then after that, it just kind of went down.
You never cheer for any of the characters, though. You cheer for the performance and the cinematography, but not necessarily for any of the characters.
Yeah.
Which, again, begs the question of why does it need to be made? But, okay, I won't beat that dead horse too much. All right. Well, let's take our one break so that people can process this. And if you haven't seen the movie and plan to, we're going to talk spoilers when we get back from this break. So stop listening here. If you're not ever going to see it, stick around. See what we thought about the spoilers and find out all the movie without having to go through the emotional bludgeoning that we went through.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Fan Effect, we're talking Joker, and we've given you the spoiler-free portion, so now we're going to dig in with some spoilers, and, well, you know what? We need to have another clip from it, I think, actually. Sorry, pressing buttons all incorrect around here.
Murray,
that's not the one. Here we go.
You don't listen, do you? You just ask the same questions every week. How's your job? Are you having any negative thoughts? All I have are negative thoughts.
Yeah. So, that's a very real vibe of the movie, and including in that scene. All right, well, let's talk spoilers then, okay? So, again, last warning, if you're going to see it, you don't want to know what happens. I don't know how much we can spoil the fact that he turns into the Joker, but... This is where I had to get out my notepad because I had to leave all my spoilers out of my written TV one. But I had a lot of thoughts. It's hard to write in the dark, and since there wasn't much light in the movie, literally and figuratively,
you know, honestly,
it was hard to see to write some of the stuff down.
Every time you wrote something down, I really wanted to ask you afterwards. I'm like, what are you writing down? Like, what triggers you as a movie critic to write something? Well, do the
song. Well, let's start from the first thing that I wrote down.
It's
that first close-up of him.
Yeah.
In the doctor's office, was he laughing or crying? His laugh and his cry sounded identical, or it was enough that I couldn't tell. Like he's talking to the therapist, so it would be a spot where he could cry, but it also kind of sounded like the Joker laugh. But since he wasn't Joker yet, and we hadn't learned about his laughing disability thing,
right?
I was like, I have no idea if he's laughing or crying, and that was the first time where I was like, all right, that was pretty cool.
Well, so I think the he did a lot of research on people who have this illness where they laugh to cope and they laugh unwillingly to deal with situations. Mm-hmm. And he read that there's a few of these that it really hurts. Like it's a painful thing to have happen. And so I know that he worked that into his development of the laugh. And so I think that's what that was. It was kind of the choking, like the trying to – get through the moment, but
right,
also the uncontrollable laugh.
We don't know what that is until he hands the card to the lady after he's talking to the little boy on the bus, and you know, this is where they create the sympathetic Arthur. He's obviously not very skilled personally. He's socially awkward to say the least, and but he wants to be a clown, you know. We meet him as some punks steal his sign and beat him with it.
Mm-hmm.
People like to kick him while he's down, literally. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's visually represented twice in the movie.
Yep.
And as you get to know him, you can see that he's almost childlike in certain ways. Like,
oh, very much
he's,
so.
Whether it's brain damage, we don't know if it's mental illness, if it's brain damage, we don't know. We just know that he's fairly childlike.
It looks
he's
like
nice to his mom. He takes mm-hmm. care of her.
Yep.
But he's in therapy.
Yep.
And he really wants to be a clown or a stand-up comedian. But when you look at his journal...
Oh,
it's disturbing.
Disturbing journal, man. Like,
that, every time they flashed it, I was just like, oh my gosh.
And you know, I thought that they did make a good attempt at trying to illustrate mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, again, my problem with, if you're trying to tell a mental illness story, Joker is not the person to hold up to give people hope for those with mental illness.
Right.
I mean, even necessarily to illustrate it. I thought there was a profound line that he wrote in there that they show you a couple of different times in his journal. The problem with mental illness is that people expect you to behave as if you don't have it.
Yeah.
Well, and it goes back
and
to...
And how do you do that? If you don't know what your mental illness manifests as, because to you it is reality.
Mm-hmm. When it goes back to just that clip you showed, he says, you don't listen, do you? Like, that's his whole drive, is he is someone hurting and trying to figure out how the world is. And he even is asking for help. He's asking for more medication. He's talking to a social worker. He's talking to people. But the world isn't listening
right.
to him. And so even tackling his mental illness... on his own, like, no one's listening to him. He's writing a journal to himself, basically.
Well, and I really feel like he's trying to dig deep at the first of the film and mm-hmm. try to not only self-cope, but also realizing, you know, that he's in a predicament, that he has this illness, and that he wants to feel better, and he mm-hmm. doesn't feel better. He's never felt good. He wants to get better. And I think it's portrayed, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'd love to hear what you guys think. I think that some of the made-up story. I mean, so he meets a friend,
yeah.
right?
His and hallucinations.
His hallucinations. His self-thoughts.
She played Domino in the Deadpool movie, and she's on Atlanta, the TV show, in case
right.
people
so
are trying to figure
they meet
out
each other, and his imagination of where, like, this relationship could go during his thought process, during his daydream.
Let me ask you guys.
He was so normal, right?
Yeah.
During his daydream, it was like a normal couple, these normal activities.
Yep.
And then when he popped out, right, he's back to himself and he continues to drop down.
At what point did you start to wonder if she was really there with him? Because I started wondering that the moment
surprised.
He kissed her after he murdered the guys. And then he goes, like, now he actually straightens up in his walk. He goes
right.
from his, like, meek walk to a swagger, and he opens the door and he starts kissing her. And then I was like, okay, did he imagine that? But then as the movie goes along and she's there in these different moments, I started to think, this is actually one of the things that I thought the movie did really well, was it created that doubt as to what mm-hmm. in the heck is happening. That happened to me several times, including up to the final scene.
I think my doubt in the relationship was actually really, really towards the front of it. If I was a woman who discovered someone was kind of following me throughout the day,
yeah. right.
I wouldn't yeah. have been like, you should have come in and robbed the place. I wouldn't have been like, you should have interacted on my day instead of just following me
I
around.
Think that's a real scene,
but then I'm
though,
like,
or
is
a real
that
interaction.
No, I don't think it is.
You don't think it is?
I don't.
No. You don't think it is
no.
at all?
No, because
oh, I thought it was.
Because I did think it was, because she also kind of seemed like, hey, man, I live in this hellhole.
Yeah.
What could make it worse? Yeah. Hey, maybe you could have come robbed it, would have made my day less
boring. As a female,
boring.
You're not going to go up to someone and, like, joke about someone stalking you throughout the day.
But look at where they live. Look at their lives.
Honest.
And look at, like, you know, what their situation is now. I could see them joking about that a little bit.
You wouldn't do it, like, at the door, though. You wouldn't.
Well,
you'd be like,
she
hey.
She doesn't know about his mental illness, though.
Oh, right? He already looks weird. Like, you saw that if the interaction
are you
in the elevator
so,
was
people
real.
By their looks,
so are
Kellyanne?
You saying? Are you also saying no. that the elevator when she did the gun to the head thing was not
that was real?
That was real, right?
That was real.
Okay.
But even that, I
so that I thought set the tone for that conversation.
No, like,
right? Because that's
you
that's
would
something
not, like,
kind of outward
like,
to
think,
do.
How easy is it? Someone like, you're always thinking about your safety as a woman. How easy would it be someone
woman,
to
so
grab you when you're at their door and
yeah,
pull you in?
I can see that.
She would not confront him at a door.
I've seen the Robin Williams movie about the doctor.
I never thought
Patch,
the kiss
Patch
was
Adams.
Real.
Patch Adams, yeah. Patch Adams. With one of the most disturbing moments of a feel-good movie you'll ever see.
Yeah.
So like, I think the elevator happened. Everything else didn't happen until he was in her apartment.
So I thought it was just very – it was – something wasn't right. I don't know if there was one moment where I was like, oh, yeah, like she's fake. Like I actually didn't see that coming. But I knew something was off because it was like – when he's following her around, and like, and I'm not like a pro at this, but he did a horrible job of following her.
I'm not a pro at stalking, but I know that was not how you do it.
And,
that,
and even in movies, like,
especially when it almost gets run over by a car.
Yeah. It's like, but then, like, it always, like, she was so casual, and then he was like, oh, you should come see, like, my comedy show, and he hadn't even, like, started doing that. No. And, like, there are all these interactions that
I
was like,
I thought that's what gave him the courage to do it, honestly.
And she has a child.
Right.
She would have been even more extra careful to take it. If she would have noticed someone stalking, you would be – well, you might call like your super or someone in the buildings, and then you'd call cops. Like you'd go to someone –
yeah.
You know, and then when she was in the hospital with him,
that's the scene
mother,
where
I'm
I,
like, this is
yes,
not real.
That's
at
the scene
all.
Where I was like, really?
Like,
no.
The first thing I can write it off is maybe the writers don't understand what it's like to be
I
a woman.
I felt like, I felt like the kiss was definitely not. It was his imagination. I thought the conversation at the door was the opening to the relationship. Mm-hmm. And him getting some confidence, and then the cafe scene, I was like, really interesting. Okay, he must seem normal to her. And then the hospital, I was like, I don't know. And then it all devolved from there.
Well, the hospital, the reason that I questioned, and I didn't know for sure, but the hospital was kind of the dead giveaway in part because he was sitting outside smoking a cigarette all by himself for just ever and ever while the cops interrogate him, and then he goes in and she's like, she'd been sitting there the whole time, like that just didn't. That didn't click in my brain that she would normally be there for that. And
I didn't put those two together. I felt like there was some time between that scene and the interior scene that she could have arrived. So that's why. Mm. But that was my doubt scene, though, too, right?
Right. But so this the whole wrinkle of doubt is introduced in early on when he watches the Murray Franklin show with his mom. And you can tell they've done this a lot. It's essentially – this movie's set, it looks like, in the early 80s.
Yeah, I think it was
late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, I think it was like
70s. Even including to the old Warner Media logo.
Yes,
at the beginning.
That was awesome, right?
The red with the black.
I
noticed
must say
that immediately.
To you and Steve, I haven't seen this logo in years.
Since the Superman movie from the 70s.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it, you know, so it's set then. So this is like the Johnny Carson-esque character. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. Somebody else pointed out on the internet that this movie was kind of based on Taxi Driver and one of the other ones that De Niro was in, Scorsese's movies. And so it was really interesting to have De Niro be in this one as well, only not be the crazy guy this time. But they're watching Murray Franklin, and suddenly Arthur's in the audience, and Arthur calls out, which seems to fit impulse control.
Yeah,
right.
You know, you're actually expecting Murray to make fun of him.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what comedians do when somebody interrupts what they're trying to do. Bring up the house lights, come on up, and then he gives his innocent answer of like, I was put on this earth to bring joy to other people and make other people smile. And you're just waiting for Murray to be like, oh yeah, well you should shut your mouth, or that he was gonna bring him on stage and humiliate him and have him taken off.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I expected to happen. And it doesn't. All of a sudden, like, it's this great moment, and he gives him a hug and he's like, son, and I was like, okay, something's not right here. This is not a
give
memory.
It all up.
This may have been a memory, because I thought maybe he was flashing back to one time he was at the show.
That's what I thought. I didn't think it was actually a hallucination until
even after he said, I'd give it all up if I had, I'd give up the fame and this show if I had a son like you.
Yeah.
Once he said that, I was like, oh, no.
I thought that was a flashback or something, and he was just being a nice guy, which would have made what happened at the end, toward the end, where Murray's like making fun of him on the, you know, on that other show.
Feel like a betrayal.
Yeah.
And it did, but that's the thing. So if the reality for Arthur was that he sees Murray kind of like a father. He doesn't know his father.
Exactly.
And his fantasy is that, oh, you know what? I'm funny and you're like me. And if it doesn't matter how famous I am, you're more important to me than that. So he needs love. And then later when Murray's making fun of him, that's like another pillar of his illusion. But also the illusion is kind of his stability is getting knocked away.
His illusion is his own reality as well, though. Like the idea of that is a father for him is very much his reality in his head.
Well, not only that. So when he meets him in his mind, right, he says, I feel like I know you so well. Mm-hmm. Right? So people do this, even if you don't have mental illness, obviously. People do this to talent on TV, on radio. They you share so much of yourself as a talent on those platforms. And people ingest that and listen to you and watch you, that over time they do feel like you're their friend. Mm-hmm. And that you're best buds. I mean, I was on the air on a radio station for 22 years, and I don't know how many times it was still uncomfortable when people would ask me for my autograph. I'm like, why? I'm just me. Just like,
right.
I'm nobody, right? So, but to them,
you're not nobody to us.
I was kind of special, or but you know what I'm saying.
No,
I'm not trying
to
pat myself on the back and saying this happens.
No,
and they become.
I've had people
like,
do that
like,
to me.
I'm your
friend.
Oh,
why? You're famous. I'm like, I am not famous. I'm on TV at
on
5 o'clock
radio.
In the morning when nobody's watching.
But it happens, and so I saw that. I could see that with the added element of mental illness becoming more entrenched and more of a real relationship to Arthur,
mm-hmm.
and more of a coveted thing to him, and something he could feel safe and good about. And then, so when that betrayal starts happening,
mm-hmm.
I mean, really, that's one of the main pillars that breaks, that starts him down the slippery slope.
Well, and it
right?
does add to a lot of that running theme of a father figure throughout
yeah.
the film,
yeah, totally.
with Thomas Wayne, with his mother, even with all these people he's met, is it runs into that theme of fatherhood and responsibility and yeah.
All right, Herb. Well, no, I was just waiting to see if Herb had any thoughts on this.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was all very interesting. How. He's going from father to father and they all betray him, and it kind of and he just like I guess that's a big thing in this film too, is just that Arthur feels like society betrays him, his father betrays him, and then his mother, who is like really his like closest
only
and only
constant.
Friend
yeah
yeah
the one actual reality in his
right.
life
right
the one who
betrays
actually
him
betrayed him to that point oh
yeah, yeah so it's like betrayal and then what's interesting is that he like embraces, and you know, it's interesting because he's actually, funny enough, he's betraying this whole civil unrest movement, this mm-hmm. whole killer clown movement. Mm-hmm. He betrays it and he resists it and pushes it away. But then at the end,
when he
embraces it, like then he's like this like king of, you know, king of crime.
Crime clown king of Gotham.
There we go.
Too much alliteration.
She also can't say abominable, so don't ever try to say that. one of the things about illusions in this, so there was a few times, there's the scene where it cuts from, he's got his hand, I'm trying to remember where it was. It might have been at Arkham Asylum, where he has his hands on the counter and he's looking down and he's kind of in that gripping the podium sort of pose. And then it cuts immediately back to his apartment and he's in that exact same pose. And then I wondered if like all of that stuff was imagined. You know, for 10 minutes of the movie, Batman and Joker were brothers.
Oh, my God.
That
was
like,
a whole other can of worms.
I was like, whoa, twist. Love it. But
right.
Then.
But you're also like, well,
like,
okay, that could
like
explain some stuff, I
yeah.
guess. That's an interesting thought. Batman wouldn't know that, maybe. And, you know, Joker certainly wouldn't know that. The scene where again, since the illusion thing all the way to the end, when it all wraps and he's sitting there in white smoking the cigarette with the next therapist, only now he's in Arkham
mm-hmm.
yeah. after all the crime has taken place, for a split second I thought, holy crap, did he just imagine this whole movie?
I had the same thought.
And I thought, that's one way to do this where it doesn't actually tie into the Batman mythos, where it can be a standalone movie, and then you could argue this really isn't a comic book film. This crazy guy Arthur Fleck imagined this whole scenario in which he becomes the Joker, even though he's not Batman's Joker. It just all happens to take place in Gotham City. And and I was like, dang you, Todd Phillips, you really messing with my mind now. And then, you know, he walks out and he leaves the blood streaked footprints on the floor. And
I don't want it to be that. I think that'd be cool, but I don't want it to be
no,
that.
No, I don't either. And yeah, I don't think it was. But for a split second, I was like, oh, you got me good. You got me like M. Night Shyamalan
yeah.
level.
There's something, though, that happens early in the film that I don't know if we ever answered. Maybe we could like – maybe you guys could help me if they,
okay,
if they answer
it?
This.
Sure. Yeah.
So there's a point when he's talking to his therapist, the social worker, and she said – and I think it's her. And then he like – it's like he says something like – he says something and then she's like, oh – you remember last time you were in Arkham or last time you were mm-hmm. locked up. And then I think it cuts to him banging his head against the thing. What was that?
I never
like the
answered
last,
it.
Yeah, I never
I
answered
the
what the last
question.
Time was. Like what what happened the last, or like what happened last time he was locked
the
up.
The last time
he was head against the glass and everything. Yeah.
The
yeah.
last time he was in Arkham was when his mom was in Arkham.
But he was a grown up in this. And when he was in
the background, era. That's him visualizing the scene, like when as he's reading the file, uh-huh. and his mom is obviously younger and looks
this,
a lot
no,
like
this is
Emma.
Before that. This is like 45 minutes before that.
Yeah, when you're first talking with the social worker, yeah. She's like, "Well, you know why you're here. You know why you were committed last time, basically." And it flashes to him in Arkham, and he's looking through the observation window on the room, and he's smashing his head against it, so it's breaking.
Okay.
And he's just like, yeah, I know. And he leaves it. You never realize
find out why. Yeah.
I thought that was crazy. I thought that was kind of an underscore of like he.
I just took that in stride. Oh, he's
yeah,
nuts.
That he's,
of course
yeah,
he was committed
yeah,
before.
That he's nuts. That he's.
He's had an episode.
He's done
that's
something.
Why he's medicated. It shows
yeah.
that he's not just going unstable. He's fully unstable. And now they've kind of
tempered
normalized him a little bit. But that the potential is there.
Yeah, I saw that as the whatever he did to get there, the social worker was his release. Like he
kinda
had
like
to
a parole type thing.
Yeah, parole, and then also that is also what kept his medication coming, uh-huh. right? So you have mm-hmm. to be on these meds, and then you have to go see this person, mm-hmm. you know, and talk this stuff out, so you don't go back to the slum or back to Arkham type of thing. That's kind of how I thought about yeah. it. But then when the whole social worker thing dried up and the medications dried up, like how am I not going to, you know, how am I going to get my
meds? Don't get off your meds.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
Yeah, he did say at one point, I've stopped taking my meds. He says,
well,
he
didn't have
like,
any. For okay. Yeah, you're right. When his friends come over.
Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting, too, that the only time we see him. So, okay, so the end of the movie, right? Last scene, we see him smoking a cigarette in the white, you know, thing in Arkham, right? And then there's the only other time we see him, like, as a patient in Arkham is when he's banging his head. Which I mean, someone's going to make this theory. I'm not saying it's my theory, but someone's going to say it. That like that, he's thinking of this whole story, banging his head against the window or whatever. And like, this is all made up. Like that's going to be like, someone's going to draw that comparison.
Well, that's what you just said,
yeah.
pretty much.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And so like, they're going to use that first scene where he's banging his head as evidence that like, oh, he's like banging his head.
He's never left Arkham. Right, all this gotcha. Has happened.
I love that right. we've all seen this film and we're all like, okay, so what actually happened right. though?
Yeah. There was some. There was.
I
want definitely... to
go see it again, but I don't.
I that's why yeah. I
do,
meant
but
too.
I don't.
I want to see it again only because now that I know the trajectory of his of what happens to yeah. him, I can maybe get a little bit more of like the meat there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's very. I don't know. It's just very like. There's something about it that's very like. I don't know how to feel like kind of what you were saying earlier with like the scenes and like when he kills those guys in the train like. Like it's
that's
like,
a legitimate self-defense.
Yeah.
So I actually figured it out as I thought back through. He kills a total of seven people.
Seven. Okay.
Seven people. The three Wall Street guys on the subway, two of which were full on self-defense. I mean, they were viciously attacking him on the subway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The third guy he wings and then finishes the job. That one's I'll call
like
that his first.
Break.
That's called his first murder.
Yeah.
You could also say. You know, it's at the end of his rope. He's been abused like that by kids. He's been abused mm-hmm. like that by adults. He's lost his job. He's, you know, everything is bottomed out. And now these rich dudes are, and then he finds out later they worked for Wayne, which is a whole different thing. So the first one, he's killed those three. Then he suffocates his mother.
Oh,
that was dark.
Terrible scene.
That was his turning point.
Yeah, well, his turning point was before
no, I think
he did
his
that.
His turning point was the subway.
Yeah, because he says later in the movie, he says it to Zazie Beetz, but, you know, I did this horrible thing and,
yeah.
and it didn't bother me. Mm-hmm. But so there's four. Then he murders the guy who sold him the gun with scissors. Thought he was going to murder the short
guy
too.
Which, shows
which as soon as he locked that yeah. door, I was like, somebody be dying in this apartment.
Well, yeah. so, and that's to go back to what I said.
And
earlier,
that made it even worse is when he knew he couldn't reach it.
It's just the people who have wronged him.
Yeah.
Right. right.
The people yeah. who showed him love and who had never wronged him are fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then he murders that's... Murray live on television.
Yeah.
Oh,
that
man.
Was insane.
That was. Okay.
He
so,
saw it coming, though.
I, one of the TV
oh, totally.
Producers.
Yeah, you felt
one of the TV producers, I said, I can't give this away because I know you're going to go see it. But there's some stuff that's happened that you're going to be like, that would never, ever happen on live TV. Because yes. as soon as that gun came out, they're cutting away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. yeah.
Even in 1981.
I still think the first shot could have happened because it was so fast.
But he had the gun out before that.
They would have.
Not on set.
Yeah, because he was going to shoot himself.
He had it in the green room.
No, but even on set. He doesn't whip it out and shoot him in the head like all in one motion, if I remember right.
Yeah, he does.
I think he – I can't remember now.
I think
they,
he does.
They left him in the green room. He has the gun out.
But or
then,
maybe – okay, then,
it, then they show him then go
it was,
through the
once
drape,
he admitted to the murders on live television – I
they
can't imagine they would have kept going with it.
I don't know, because
and
I think that they were trying to figure
it's
out.
It's a comedy show.
Shut it all down.
Yeah, I think the cameras would have been rolling, actually. I think they would have cut right after Murray.
I think it fits the worldview that we have nowadays where we're fascinated by that kind of stuff. But
should we go down and
the
ask
reality,
the producers?
Well, no, but that's the thing. The reality is they would never do it, even if everyone in the world would want to see what happened next.
Well, it's a callback to the comics, The Dark Knight Returns. He also kills a host on the television before gassing the whole audience.
Right,
with
that's,
Venom.
So that's four.
It's also a callback to the
that's
comics.
That's five. And then he kills... See, there was two more people as the movie winds to its close. Oh, he kills the doctor. So that's six.
Right, right.
And
consider the cops that was killed.
Oh, he
no,
kills
the
girlfriend? The girl in the apartment building, right?
She doesn't kill.
No, he doesn't kill her.
Uh-uh. Oh, really? At least I took it away that he killed her because he was in her apartment and she was like, get out. And then he's in his apartment and you hear ambulance sirens. So
I thought I didn't think of
that. I thought we were meant to believe
that. That makes
her.
Me even angrier.
I don't know because I just don't know what.
Now you've made me even more depressed.
I think she
the last
several
thing
days
she
later,
says is my son is back, sleeping.
Or my daughter,
or my daughter.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I hope he didn't. Okay, so anyway, that six on screen. How about six on screen kills?
Yeah, at least.
But the first murder, the one with the scissors. I checked my watch. Hour and 40 minutes into the movie.
Hang on. The first murder is Subway.
Subway.
Well, I'm saying the first time when he embraces the Joker. The dude who he shoots.
You don't think going after the guy who's crawling away and finishing him off with six bullets isn't embracing the Joker at that point?
He suffocated his mom before.
He shot those two guys on the Subway. Okay, first of all, back up. He's playing with the gun in his mom's apartment, right? And he's playing like a child. You can tell he's so childish. He doesn't understand the power of this weapon he has. He discovers it on accident, freaks him out. But he starts to okay, I get it. He's discovering the power that this could give him. And then he realizes that power in the Subway. Self-defense. Oh, yeah. Totally agree. But you see him stammer around, not really dance, but stammer and think and oh my gosh, what just happened? Look at these guys. And then he just, I've got one more, right?
I gotta stop.
Grabbed his bag and goes after him. He's not going after him quickly. He's thinking as he's in a rage and I don't know what his mental mindset is, but it's not coherent and it's so primitive that when he finally gets to him, he just finishes him off. And I think right then, is where the Joker starts coming through.
Right.
I feel like the scissors was more the Joker that we know and super violent, and I totally get where you're coming from there, but I think that's not the first part of the slippery slide. I think the slippery slide happened on the Subway, and that just helped it dig deeper. Does that make sense?
But his reaction after that of running and looking in the mirror and going and trying to calm himself in that bathroom.
Yeah, that was an amazing scene of self-soothing, right?
Yeah.
He freaked himself out so much. Found out.
Yeah,
that,
dude, his weird dancing.
That's Tai Chi.
Yeah.
That was his Tai Chi, which
weird.
Was amazing.
It's probably a coping mechanism.
Because it wasn't
taught
good Tai Chi, but it was Joker Tai Chi. For Arthur, that was an amazing scene.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And freaky.
Yeah, very freaky.
That was almost as freaky as the Subway killing.
There were some disturbing scenes. I mean, yeah, the Subway killing was interesting to me because he's got the orange vest, he's got his makeup on, and then there's the train is yellowy green, and the visuals and colors there are amazing. And then the other scene after the scissors kill, or maybe it's right before the scissors kill, and this is in the trailer, but the one where he's just got the white paint, and he's hanging on the walls and just And then after he does the scissor thing and he's got the blood,
So now that gets to the part where we had teased earlier. So the scissors, we didn't necessarily need to see him shoving the scissors in the guy's eye, and we didn't necessarily need to
see him banging his
head
against the wall.
Really just finishing him off. But there's no way to edit around that because it was very deliberate. They wanted the blood on the white face.
Right.
And that's, this is
even
one of the
sitting
reasons.
Here, we're all moving uncomfortably.
Right, and that's one of the things I didn't like about this because a Joker is a Joker without graphic violence a good Joker? Sorry, poor choice of words, but I can't think of another way to phrase it. Is a Joker without graphic violence the Joker?
Well, you know my answer. My Joker is Mark Hamill's version of an animated series.
So you can have a Joker who's compelling.
Flooding Gotham River with Joker fish and things like that. So.
So it can be done and it can be liked. Mm-hmm. But somehow we've decided that we need the Alan Moore Joker who breaks into an apartment, shoots Barbara Gordon in the spine, strips her naked, takes pictures of her in order to torture her dad. We've decided that we need the Heath Ledger Joker who, you know, spills acid on Harvey Dent's face and murders Bruce Wayne's love interest. I don't know why, other than maybe fans have grown up and now they want grown-up type stuff.
Well,
I'm sure there's some truth to that.
I mean, the Joker, in his first appearance, he, like, commits, like, I think he uses, like, I think that's when he uses, like, a solution to make people die while laughing and smiling. I think that's his first appearance ever, is he just, like, is murder, like, from the beginning. And I even, like, I talked to a comic book expert guy who was
telling me. Yeah, he debuted in Batman number one.
Yeah, he was telling me that, like, Joker was very, very violent in the beginning, did a lot of killing, and then there was this period where he didn't really do much.
Right.
And they were focusing on other issues, like, you know, other villains.
He was actually intended to be killed in that first appearance.
Interesting.
And they changed their mind.
Yeah.
He didn't get killed, but they wanted him to.
And then, he's always just been a violent character, and so, and I think we just expect that. It's just odd for the main character of a movie to be that kind of violent. Now, it's interesting because, like, you could argue that, like, Captain America or even Batman himself are violent based on how they use it, but it's also like they're not taking scissors and...
You've got a little fight in you. I like that. Then you're going to love me.
Oh, yeah, so it's just like... Yeah.
So, and that's my argument. This is one of the heart of my argument is I don't think we need a Joker movie because Joker is Joker. We need the fully formed Joker. As I mentioned in the open, you know, our hero has to elevate to defeat. You know, that's what makes them heroic is that they overcome the impossible odds. So you want a good villain. You want a villain that would terrify the average person so that the hero can then... And then you can say, gosh, I hope I could be like that hero. But I don't think we need to know where Joker came from. I mean, I used The Dark Knight as an example. He gives three different stories. As a matter of fact, I have a clip of one of those.
Ooh, from the archives.
Well, you look nervous. Is it the scars? You want to know how I got them? So I had a wife. She was beautiful, like you, who tells me I worry too much. Who tells me I ought to smile more? Who gambles and gets in deep? One day they carve her face. She can't take it. I just want to see her smile again. I just want her to know that I don't care about the scars. So, I stick a razor in my mouth and do this to myself. And you know what? She can't stand the sight of me. She leaves. Now I see the funny side. Now I'm always smiling.
First of all, that's some great. That is some great movie making. Yeah. That rising background noise as he tells it more. I mean, I was completely enthralled, and I can't even see it right now. That was just an audio clip. But you know, that Joker. It seems like we need that now, and I think that the deliberate not knowing Joker's background, it doesn't matter where he came from. The fact is he's there. You know, one of the things Adam Thomas said to me, he's one of the original OG SLC fanboys. I was talking to him about it, and he's not going to go see Joker either. He said, you know, in The Dark Knight, the Joker is there as the foil to Batman. But there's no question that the Joker's the bad guy of The Dark Knight. There's no question. Batman's the good guy. Joker's the bad guy. Who's the bad guy in Joker?
Himself. Like, there isn't. It's
this anti-hero thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the anti-hero personally. That's just my style. I'm a Luke Skywalker, not a Darth Vader guy.
Oh, Luke,
Tyson, I know
you.
But that's me. So I understand that some of this is my own personal taste and my own personal worldview.
Here's the thing. Honestly, I think this movie was made not because we need a Joker movie, not because we need a Joker origin story, but because Todd Phillips had an idea for. Mm-hmm. A gritty movie that he wanted to tell a certain story, and he saw the Joker as the perfect embodiment of what he wanted to do. Does it make sense? Maybe that's wrong. Maybe he did want to make a Joker movie, and he just wanted to make something super off the wall and gritty. But I just felt like he spent an entire year talking Warner Brothers into letting him have this key this key character and doing what he did to this character, because in Warner Brothers, like, we sell Joker pajamas at Target. Like,
again, that's another problematic thing. Like, what it's are we like the do RoboCop 13-year-old toys from the 80s.
But I feel like there's this push right now for this dark universe thing, this dark whatever, this more gritty type of movie telling and storytelling that we're getting away with so far. And I feel like Todd Phillips is one of those creators who's wanting to push in this direction to be more gritty, to make something more mature, and to tell some deeper, more disturbing stories. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's kind of how it feels to me. I don't really feel like this is part of the DC universe, and it's not going to be a part of the next Batman.
Yeah, you don't see the DC logo till the very end of the credits.
Well, I don't think Joaquin Phoenix is going to be in the next Batman movie as Joker. Like, if there's a Joker in it, it's not going to be him. It's not going to be this Joker. Does that make sense?
I feel like that would commercially undersell what he was trying to do artistically.
Yeah.
He doesn't strike me as a mainstream movie kind of guy, Joaquin Phoenix does. True.
I think one thing you keep asking, though, is... do we really need his origin story? But the fact of the matter is, even I've discovered us sitting here today, is we really still don't know the origin story of Joker, because how much was in his head, how much is real, how much was not. We're even arguing now if the whole film wasn't just him hallucinating. Like, we still don't know his origin story. He still doesn't know his origin story.
That's such a fascinating thought that he was hallucinating the whole thing, because that dance and that kind of pose, that like...
The
arms up pose. I'm trying to do this on radio and podcast. The arms up, like, I'm the star.
You know,
pose,
this thing right here?
Yeah, this thing you can't see right here? You're right, because he does that to self-soothe, and he does that for himself throughout the film. And then he portrays it at the end of the film. And it's interesting to think, what if in 6 months after the buzz is gone, it's out of theaters, that Todd comes back and is like, yeah, that was exactly what I thought, you know.
He just imagined the whole thing.
This Arthur guy,
I think that makes people
he's in Gotham,
too.
You know, this Arthur guy, these things were happening, but it wasn't him.
Villains That's are interesting. More interesting than heroes to portray. I've heard actors say this all the time. Mm-hmm. I get it, but what are we aspiring to? This leads into, Herb, your article in the Deseret News. I wish we had more time to go into more depth, but give us a summary. The title of your article, and as soon as I saw it, I read the whole entire thing.
Oh, thank you.
This is the wrong time for Joker. In an era of mass shootings, is it right to do a glorification story about a mentally ill white man who's so damaged by society that he eventually becomes a killer? Give us a summary of that. I realize there's more to it, and I'd like people to actually read the whole article, but summarize it for us. Tease ahead for it.
Yeah, so I interviewed a couple experts about just the history of the Joker, history of film, history of villains, just all this kind of stuff. And basically what it comes down to is, based on what they were saying, is that the Joker's a cult-like figure that a lot of people like. And we were talking about this earlier. He has a lot of charisma. He's been portrayed really well by actors in the past. Give or take how you feel about Jared Leto. But basically,
I could not find a good Jared Leto quote from Suicide Squad. I spent about an hour looking to see if I could find a good soundbite. Doesn't have any good ones in Suicide Squad.
So basically, like, the idea is, like, he could inspire real-life violence, because people who maybe see themselves in this Arthur Fleck character, see themselves in this version of Joker, will end up causing real-life violence. And there's a history of that in Hollywood. Research is still, you know, back and forth about whether or not, like, media leads to violence. You know, we heard about this after some mass shootings with video games. But... there is this question of, like, okay, you make a movie about Joker where there is this violence, where there's a history of just, you know, gun use. And obviously, as we've seen, like, there is gun use in this movie. Will that inspire more people to do it? And obviously, and it kind of came about because of all the hysteria going around about Joker screenings, whether it be a shooting because of the Dark Knight Rises shooting in Aurora, Colorado.
And they're not showing Joker.
Right. One of the theaters said they're not
only
showing.
Only that
her.
One.
Right.
And they also said that we don't have a problem with DC making the film or Warner making the film. And even the victims were saying, we're not saying you shouldn't make the movie, but what we'd like you to do is, you know, do some positive stuff too. Right. One of the lines I liked in your article is, there's never a good time nor a bad time to release a Joker film. I feel like that is saying to us, like, look, the responsibility is on us, you know.
Right.
It is a movie. Warner's statement specifically, I think I wrote it down, was, let's see, it is not the intention of the film, the filmmakers, or the studio to hold this character up as a hero.
Right.
But my problem, again, was I spent 2 hours watching the creation of a villain whose murderous actions were actively cheered by people in the movie. Not people in the crowd.
Right.
But people in the movie.
in the climax, and I just, there was nothing redeeming about the movie. There was nothing redeeming about the movie.
Well, I kind of disagree with you that right there, because
his whole
thing,
redeeming?
Well, his whole thing was, you're not listening to me. You don't listen to me, do you? And he goes more and more nuts. And we see the background
but
of this
bubbling.
But was
she not listening to him, or was that just his perception?
Well, I think maybe
I don't
it's
think
not.
She was, but the background of Gotham is the people are struggling in the exact same way. Mm-hmm. You're not listening to me. We keep hearing about how great a guy Thomas Wayne is, but everyone in the background's like, no, he's not. We want to solve these issues. There's trash piling up everywhere. There's all this chaos everywhere. And if the hero, being like a Batman or Thomas Wayne character, spends enough time ignoring the masses, who are they going to choose as their new hero? Is the villain?
But then how's that redeeming?
I don't think it's redeeming.
But it's
that's
a message.
My point right there.
It's a message.
But it
that
is
if
a social.
Listen,
but it's not redeeming.
If we
it's true.
Don't listen to the marginalized, they will choose their own heroes,
yeah,
and the violent among them will probably select someone violent as well. If you get to that point of anarchy, it's going to be anarchy. That's anarchist. That's the hero.
Well, it is a social commentary, I think, of what has been going on in our world. Events like this have transpired. And how he was treated is much like how most of these who are struggling are probably treated or think.
Or feel that
or feel exactly in the world today, right? So that's why it's so scary, is because it was based in our world. And a lot of the ways that these problems are being dealt with or really not dealt with is the same that we deal with them in the real world. So somebody like this could end up following a trajectory like this. That's why it's so scary. That's why it's not a comic
book. So is it a caution?
It's more, yeah.
I also want to say that I think this is a very unique kind of film, because I don't think we need to look at this as, oh, this is like Joker becoming a hero. Or like Joker, he is, right. To some people he is. But I think this is also one of those movies where it's like, it's kind of unique in a sense of like, this is the story of a villain. And that's why I think you're left to feel kind of dark and a little sad, which we don't need right now, because the world is dark and gritty enough. But that is kind of the intention, that you're going to leave feeling like, oh, I just watched the creation of a villain. And I think this is going to sound like a horrible comparison. But I think this is what like George Lucas was attempting to do with like, Anakin Skywalker becoming Darth Vader.
You think so?
Yeah, a little bit. Like I wish that had been like what they had done, where it's like you feel really sad and like kind of like let down by it.
Yeah.
Because that story, the prequel trilogy, is theoretically the creation of a villain, and you know, and everything like that.
But that
so,
villain was Darth Sidious.
Oh,
no,
nice.
He was the creator.
Twist.
Of
but. I do
always
think
go back
I
to
think
Star Wars.
I think the fact
it always
that it's
comes
a,
back
every
to
time,
Star Wars.
Every
it doesn't
time.
Matter the podcast. We're just going to tell you that.
I think it is the creation of a villain there, and I think that is tough to sell to children, obviously, which is why a lot of theaters have come out and a lot of places have come out and said, "Don't let your children see this. This is not a children's movie." But it does. I mean, everyone's going to see trailers, everyone's going to see stuff, you know, you're going to see it in the store. So it's kind of weird, like you said, like when you go to Target and you see Joker pajamas that has like the Mark Hamill version.
Yeah, it's not going to be the Joaquin Phoenix version.
No.
Right.
But kids are going to have
a
hard time knowing that there's
character.
A difference. That's on their parents to make
That's
sure that they
point.
Understand.
Right.
That is fair. That is fair. But it's still there and the kids are still seeing it.
Yeah.
I walked out of this and it's a poor comparison, maybe not so poor, but for those of you who watched The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Or not The Walking Dead, sorry, Breaking Bad.
Oh, the Joaquin Dead.
90% of every episode left me feeling something like this. Not to this extent, but nothing was uplifting in that series.
Right.
But you were developing somebody who was normal and developing a villain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his fall into villainy But anyway, I felt like it was much the same for me.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when people ask me, and I'm sure you guys have all gotten this question of like, how was the Joker?
Oh my gosh!
Like
yeah,
answering
that's
that question,
a hard
is
question
disturbing.
To answer.
Yeah, that question is hard to answer, because you want to say, and we've kind of said it right. Like, yeah, it's beautiful, it's great, but then it's also like, but I have a hard time celebrating a movie that is about like a dude,
right,
going off and killing people, and then like that's like it, like he just goes down,
right.
And you could argue he starts pretty low, because there's that
yes,
that first like shot of him like sitting at the mirror with the paint on, and he like pulls his mouth and then he's like crying, like,
yeah. And how about him sticking his fingers in Bruce Wayne's mouth?
That was
weird.
Creepy.
Yeah.
And why would Bruce Wayne just stand there and let a dude put his hands in his mouth? I don't know, that's
no
a whole other story.
Rich kid is gonna do
Herb, no. Question.
Yeah.
Now that you've seen the movie,
mm-hmm,
what would you add to your article, or what would you say to Herb Scribner from a week ago.
Yeah, so funny enough, just before I came on this podcast, I did publish a follow-up. So
oh,
I definitely
really?
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't even read that yet.
And it's called The Saddest Part of Joker. And the saddest part to me, and we briefly touched on this, but it's this movie has a ton to say about mental illness, about mental health, about listening, about, I mean, the way the social worker woman, the therapist says, they cut our funding. That is a huge issue. There's research out there that says that people who have mental illness do not have the resources to get the help they need, and they don't know how to get the help they need. And this is an exact. He says, "Where am I going to get my medication?"
Yep.
And it's clear that he probably doesn't. So
that's why he stopped taking it. Yeah, maybe.
Exactly. So to me, like, that was a big follow up to me. Is like, there's that huge issue. Now, the one thing that I didn't, that the violence overshadows it, though. Mm-hmm. Where, like, you know it's there, you know there's this violent, there's this mental health discussion there, but you're wondering about the graphic violence, you're wondering about, you watch the graphic violence, and then to me the big scene that shows this is at the end with on Murray's show when he's giving, and I wish I had.
And
like,
he goes
listened.
On the show originally to kill himself,
right?
Yeah,
and he goes on there and he like has this impassioned speech about how society treats people like him and how he gets ignored and how they care more about these three rich kids dying than they would if he did. They'd pass him on the street. And like, I'm trying to absorb it, but you know he's going to shoot Murray. The whole time you're waiting for the violence.
Well, I thought he was going to shoot somebody. Didn't know it would be Murray for sure.
Yes. You know something's going to happen. You feel, and even the music's like, there's tension there. You know something's going to happen. And like, but he's actually saying something that like is really, really important. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in that moment, we don't get that lesson. And then, of course, like if that is all going on in his head, and it's all just a, hallucination, then like we definitely missed the point. So that's something I would have told myself last week, is that like, it's going to be graphic. I don't think it's pretty graphic, but I think that there was some hysteria over how graphic it was.
Right.
I think
that's why I said when I timed hour 40 was the first really,
right,
violent, like intentional graphic death.
Yeah. My thing would have been, yeah, it's not maybe as graphic as you think, but there's a bigger issue about mental health that goes like kind of, it's there, but they don't go fully into it. And maybe if it wasn't a Joker movie and it was Laugh or Clown or whatever we were talking about earlier, you would have been able to explore that a little bit more.
I just don't know everybody's going to get the message out of that movie. That's the only thing. I think this is a great example of a dichotomy movie. The good, the bad, the parts you don't want to see versus the parts you ought to see. Is it real? Is it fake? Like, there's all these opposite things. I'm sure a lot of those were intentional. Some of them may not be. One thing I worry about personally is that, and I've seen this happen before, there's all this hysteria last week about the violence in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then people go see it and like, that wasn't that bad. I was expecting way worse.
Well, I think it's because they were expecting a comic book movie and they got
maybe
something completely different.
No, but I worry that people will say, oh, it's going to be so terrible. Then they see it and it's terrible. Mm-hmm. But they're like, it's not as terrible as I imagined.
Yeah.
And it just creates the next cycle of how crazy can
the
we
take it?
At least
starting a discussion about all these different things.
Have
it
you seen Halloween 2018?
Nope.
Come on.
2019?
It's on par. Or 20.
Nope.
No, it was last year.
I definitely think. I think Game of Thrones, especially at certain points, is more graphic than this was. It's hard, though, because there are scenes here that are like so graphic, but then the visuals, it's not just like the act of violence itself, but it's just the, like we were saying earlier, the blood on the face. Like, that is a disturbing image.
But I think with it tied up with the story they're telling and the character they're portraying, that's why it's so jarring.
Mm-hmm.
Game of Thrones, 300, Halloween, horror movies. You're taken out. You expect blood, guts. You expect that type of a thing because of where you are. And you're taken out of some of the violence. I think some of the violence is, I don't know. I don't know how to really articulate it.
But
you know what you're watching, and so you know kind of what to expect.
Right.
But the production companies has tried to couch it. It's not going to be your average superhero movie. It is going to be different. They've talked about the violence. So is it really your fault walking into that?
This is, by the way, if you've
now?
Seen the Amazon series The Boys, or even the trailer for the Amazon series The Boys, that's every bit of violent, is not, if not more violent than this. So,
yeah.
I mean, we are kind of, we're ignoring some other
motes or beams in order to focus on a couple of motes, to use a particular analogy. But to me, and again, if you've listened to this podcast for a while, or if you see my movie reviews and you feel like you agree with me generally in how I see movies, the best illustration that I can think of is, ironically, it's an old Mormon ad from when I was a teenager, and it's a dish of ice cream, and it's a big, it looks like a sundae. It's got a big thing of whipped cream on the top. A bite's already been taken out of it. Looks delicious, and it says it's great, except for the bad parts. And then right in the middle of it, there's a cockroach right in the ice cream sundae. And so to me. How much of that ice cream could you eat before you get the cockroach germs? I mean, I look at this movie and I think of the cinematic, the acting, and that's the whipped cream. It's the ice cream. It's the size of it. And then there's the distasteful part and the distasteful feeling I had leaving it, and that's the cockroach that's right in it. How much of this would I want to have before I get to the part that I don't want to have? And can I – is there a way to eat that without having – there's no way to know. There's no way to know how much cockroach germ is in that ice cream sundae. I don't know. So it's up to you. Either eat it all or stay away from it.
Mm. Yeah, I ate a lot of the ice cream. but to me, the point, and I kind of agree earlier with the take that this is it was a turning point, was when he suffocated his mother.
Yeah.
To me, that was where I was like, okay, like that's a little too much for me. I can handle the other stuff, but that one was like, oh, that's, and it's like really tragic. But there's a lot of like weird, kind of strange things in this movie, one of which I don't know about, but I'd like to know more about with the fridge.
Oh, the fridge. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, we can. We'll.
Yeah. So he actually fridges himself. And if you don't know what that means, it's a comic book term penned by originally created by Gail Simone. And it's the idea that usually in comic book movies and comic books in these type of stories, a woman is used as motivation for a character.
Her death.
For her death.
Or her death
her
or hurt, torture.
Her rape,
or, yeah,
her torture.
Kidnapping.
Whatever is used as a metaphor for a motivation for the male's character. And there's a point in the film where Arthur actually he empties out a refrigerator and climbs into it himself. And I just love, like, I don't know exactly what
it was from a DC comic. It was a Green Lantern.
It was a Green Lantern. Yeah, he comes
his
back.
Girlfriend
and his girlfriend
gets murdered
dead
and
in
put
a
in a fridge.
And so that's a comic book term. So he literally fridged himself in this movie. He climbed into it, emptied it out, closed himself in. We never even saw how he got out.
Maybe he didn't. Maybe he's still in the box, hallucinating everything.
Again, what's happening here? So I like the bravery that they actually acknowledge that by putting that very distinct image into it.
And see, I thought they did that because they could illustrate that back in the early 80s, people still had those fridges that had the No, really. That was the thought I had as I watched it was, because you could stick yourself in a fridge now, but you can't suffocate yourself because they're all magnet.
Well, and it could go
And it's because of that kids were suffocating
that's why
in fridges.
You take the fridge
There's
off
no
before throwing
latch
it away.
Handles
but
anymore.
But it could be – so the woman is usually used as his own motivation, and he is making his own life his own motivation. His own tragedy is his own motivation. It could be that's what they were trying to get at. But real quick, going back to the cockroaches, we still need to acknowledge that cockroaches are out there.
Yes.
You know, you might not necessarily want them into your ice cream. But
you
the
might
fact
not
that,
want them in your ice cream?
I don't know. Nah. Some people – I'm not going to yuck anyone's yum. But the fact that we have a movie where the cockroaches are brought in and able to bring this into somebody's life, mental illnesses, these stories of violence and chaos, you need to acknowledge that it might not be in the framework of your own life, but they are still out there. So – I don't know. Sometimes you got to eat the cockroach with the sundae.
And see, I don't think you have to eat the cockroach ever. You can, and I don't think you should be banned from eating the cockroach.
You could aspire higher.
You don't
higher.
Have to.
I'm interested to see if this film, I mean, it already has some Oscar buzz.
Yeah
and I'm not
Joaquin.
Surprised. Yes. I'm not surprised.
As we move closer to Oscar season, once that comes out and it's like Joker, you know, will it get re-released? And two, will more people embrace the cockroach? Like, will they go down that path knowing that it's an Oscar movie? That'll be kind of interesting to me too, because there's already, I feel like right now, and you were kind of talking about this earlier, but right now you do have kind of your opinion about whether you're going to see it or not. Like mm-hmm. everyone seems pretty like cutter, you know, one way or the other. So that'll be interesting as we drum towards like Oscar season, if more people are going to get totally. Involved.
Oh, definitely will.
I think they will.
Yeah.
And I might go see it a second time. Oh, I'll take like my childhood stuffed animal or something to hug, or my dog.
I will say a couple more thoughts on the film as we wrap it up. First of all, the scene where he starts dancing down the stairs representing his descent into madness.
Oh, yeah.
Very beautiful. Cool shot.
Yeah.
He leaves the mask in the garbage can because now he is the Joker. He doesn't need the clown mask anymore.
Oh, I like that.
It was proof that some people just like to watch the world burn, as Alfred famously said in The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And, well, quite a night in Gotham.
Oh, my goodness.
The Joker gets formed, murder on live television, a riot in the streets, and Thomas Wayne gets killed.
Yeah, we see pearls flying again for the 100th time.
What a...
You know, I think that scene I was actually disappointed in. I don't think...
And the pearls again. We got the pearls again.
I think them walking into the alleyway, and then that gentleman with the gentleman, the guy with the mask...
Yeah.
Following them in, that could have cut right there, and
we didn't know what was going to happen.
Exactly, yeah. Right?
Didn't need that final image of Bruce and his parents. Yeah. Didn't need
and
that.
Here's another thing: like Joker's how much older than Batman now?
Well, that's
then?
It. Right, no, right, like right. Batman, you're
is he an
up
old man when Batman
years?
Shows up later? I, anyway,
20 years later, yeah.
Yeah, I don't. And again, it speaks to that whole thing about these Batman scenes where you're just kind of like, oh yeah, it's a Batman movie.
You're beating up a 65-year-old man. Way to go, 35-year-old Batman, or not even 35.
What if Bruce Wayne becomes Batman just because he's like, some guy pulled on my cheeks and just like put his fingers in my mouth, and now I want to get revenge?
Well, and like
that goes back to the original Batman. I made you, but you made me first.
Ooh. See?
There was a lot of different Batman mythologies mixed in this movie.
I didn't like Alfred in it. I didn't like that whole
thing. I didn't realize that was Alfred.
And I think Alfred is like...
I just thought he was a guard.
Oh, it's totally Alfred.
Where was his little mustache? That's what
where
I
was his accent?
Yeah, yeah.
Did he have an accent?
Yeah, he had an accent. But like, I think Alfred would have been a little bit more like acknowledging of, like, why can't someone just tell Arthur what was going on instead of having him discover the way it was discovered? Like, Alfred seems like the type of guy to be like, hey, this is really what's happening.
Yeah.
They're not your family. I don't know.
That's
weird.
Why I thought he was just a thug.
No, that was Alfred.
Well, I'll tell you this much. As I'm sure, since you've stayed with us this long in the podcast, you've probably seen the movie. And if you haven't seen it, we've just pretty much given you the whole movie. But it is a lot to unpack. You do want to talk about it with somebody. Glad we could be here for you, Tice.
One more quick question.
Okay.
How long will it be on VidAngel?
Ooh.
17 minutes?
You know, I have a friend who said they wanted to use ClearPlay on it.
Whatever, one of those things.
I'm like, that'd be
interesting. I want to see
how much
it
is.
You'd be able to get most of it. You'd just cut out.
Yeah. Because the really violent scenes, pretty much.
Some language.
Well, anytime he brings that notebook out, I wanted to rip it out of his hands.
Yeah, anyway, sorry, the pictures in there were
awful.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah.
Well, at any rate, we hope we provided you with some discussion, some additional points, maybe some points of view that you hadn't already thought of. Thank you again, Kellyanne. Welcome. We're glad to have you back, and I'm sure we got more DC stuff coming, so we'll have
movie
you back
shows
again.
Friday 9 to noon. I produce it, listen to it, support it.
Also on KSLNewsRadio.com, mm-hmm. where you can get this very same podcast. Herb Scribner from the Deseret News, thank you for being with us. We look forward to having you back again.
Yeah, anytime. You got Star Wars, Marvel, I'm down. But yeah, feel
Star
free
Wars
to,
season is coming up.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
So
Seasons of the Force. If you will.
Ooh.
Well, starting in November for the streaming, but then also, right?
That's right.
No, which
that's
I'm actually
true. We've
excited
got Mandalorian
about.
Talk coming up here in a little while. We've
oh
got
gosh,
some good stuff
right.
to do. And Tyson, it's always nice to have you back.
Thanks, man.
And if you've joined us from social media, we hope you'll become a subscriber. Go to podcasts on Apple. Go to Google Play Music and search Fan Effect, EFFECT. Share our podcast and give us a review. Tell us what you think. I say give us 5 episodes before you decide whether or not to unsubscribe, because I think in 5 episodes, you're going to love our show. And we hope you enjoy it and had as much fun listening as we had making it.